We are back for episode 336, I believe. Joe, how are you doing?
I'm just fine, Tim. How are you?
Very well, thank you. Well, did you watch the Super Bowl massacre? Or did you hear about the Super Bowl massacre, rather?
Yeah, the Palestinian massacre that was part of the halftime show.
Yeah, we're not talking about the game itself. It was actually close. It was Chiefs won in overtime, 25-22, I think. And of course, they had a parade this week, celebrate the their dynasty, the second consecutive Super Bowl championship they've won. And of course, there was a shooting. Now,
sure.
I laugh because out of exasperation, not because of, you know, I find it, you know, funny, not out of mirth, just out of just sort of frustration, exasperation. Two black juveniles were apprehended as the suspects. So what do you expect? Of course, the Super Bowl, breads and circuses is what you expect. I enjoy watching football, and it's to me, it's an opportunity to get together and socialize with family. So I watch it and enjoy the game and kind of laugh at the commercials, you know, kind of observe the culture, that sort of thing. To me, you can enjoy watching sports. But nevertheless, it is a spectacle. It's almost as now. It's almost as if the Super Bowl is fitted within the spectacle. That's professional sports. Now, there was a thing I was listening to a talk where he's talking about Notre Dame football when it became so commercialized, and sort of this pagan ritual superseded the Catholic university that was established there. When I think there was a guy that represented NBC, the network, and he would tell the coach when to call a timeout so they could run a commercial. This was usually orchestrated when the game was close and most eyeballs were on TV watching it. So the game itself was changed to promote advertising. In fact, that's why the NFL instituted the 2-minute warning, I believe, for advertising. So we see it now. The over commercialization has always been commercial. It's always been based on betting and all that. Now it openly celebrates betting, promotes vice, you know, with FanDuel, and it's been incorporated into the game itself. Super Bowl was held in Las Vegas, and Las Vegas has a football team now, so that tells you that. But what occurred, there was it's called the Super Bowl Massacre. While Americans watched the Super Bowl, they were treated to anti-hate ads paid for by Jewish oligarchs. The Israelis carried out a massacre of more than 100 Palestinian civilians in the village of Rafah, which I think had been designated a safe zone by the Israelis for refugees from the IDF onslaught. And of course, the Super Bowl sort of, I guess, covered it up. I don't think it makes a difference anymore because our political leadership simply doesn't care about what's going on there. What we're witnessing here is the ethnic cleansing of Gaza, which has always been the objective of the Israelis. I mean, this even predates the establishment of the Israeli state. I think Theodore Herzl said that ethnic cleansing was necessary to bring about the creation of the Israeli state. And countless, or at least multiple, Israeli officials and potentates have commented on the eventual ethnic cleansing of the area to create, you know, the greater Israel. But
yeah, I mean, even the proto-Zionists, the British Freemasons, talked about depopulating the region of the Arabs. Mm-hmm. And when they referred to them, they used the expression, which would be the N-word. They said they're people without any value. The quote that Israel Zangwill is you know, famous for, that it's a land without a people that will be for a people without a land. Mm-hmm. That's actually he's paraphrasing Salisbury, who is Lord Palmerston's father-in-law, I think. And so,
see the guy wrote the play A Melting Pot.
I don't know.
He came up with the idea of the American melting pot. I think he had the same person.
It's possible. But anyway, so, you know, the idea of ethnic cleansing has 100%. I mean, it's been on the table, Tim. I mean, actually, since Deuteronomy, just read it. People should actually from time to time just read Deuteronomy, and you can see the, you know, it's all there, including the extermination, the genocide of the ethnicities. This is all sanctioned by God. Mm-hmm. So when you look at the history of Israel, going back to Palmerston 1840, when the, you know, the Zionist project begins, to the current time, it has never had anything other than ethnic cleansing in mind. the attempts are the purported attempts for a two-party state, and you know, this kind of stuff has always been sophistry. It's always just nonsense. You have the letter by McMahon who describing his correspondence with Hussein, and he just said, look, everything I tell him is just a matter of words. In other words, a lie. All that really matters is to tempt them into supporting us so we can topple the Ottoman Empire. And after that, we'll just have free reign in the area. So they stole the land, and with the intention of ethnic cleansing. And so now, you know, you've seen the maps that you know, depict the slow step-by-step erosion of the Palestinian owned areas. When you get to this final moment where they've got them all crunched into the very southern part of what used to be Gaza, of course they're going to slaughter. Of course. I mean, it's absolutely axiomatic to the philosophy and the behavior of these people since, well, going back to Deuteronomy. There's really, now having said that, I just want to point out that, you know, in the 19th century, you did have Reformed Judaism, and it was an anti-Zionist religion. It was only because of the Freemasons that religion was shattered. So, yeah, you can, you know, point to Deuteronomy as a historical, you know, this is showing there's malintent on the part of the people who are in this religion to other ethnicities. But it didn't keep Reformed Judaism from coming into existence. And it was only, you know, destroyed, that form of Judaism destroyed in the 19th century because of the power, the wealth, and of the Zionist Freemasons, which has brought us to the present time. It is, in my opinion, you know, if I was a Jewish person, I would really look at this with shame and horror and speak out against it. It's a shame there isn't, you know, more people who are familiar with the works of, you know, the Reformed Zionists, the Reformed Jews, because, you know, you would have a voice for the Palestinians that might be heard. At the present time, Tim, the genocide now isn't even on the news anymore. It's just something that is, you know, happening and no one even cares about.
Yeah, there, this U.S. Congress continues to send aid or support for Israel's ethnic cleansing. The problem is that, you know, I'm not saying there are Jews there who don't like this support. They have no power. There's a categorical difference between the Jews and Jews. So there's individual Jews, and maybe many individual Jews who don't like this, but they have no power. And it's the Talmudists who are in power. And that's the political problem, the practical political problem we face today. The Rothschilds were devoted Talmudists, and so when they became, you know, financially, I guess, the financial powerhouse of Europe, taking over the Bank of England, the British Empire, and you know, Meyer sent his five sons to the five cities, Frankfurt, Naples, Paris, Vienna, and London, to set up this transnational relationship to sort of the subvert the nations, create sort of this familial and tribal bond. You also see in both Talmudism and Freemasonry a misanthropy, a hatred for the poor, anti-Christian view. So there's a blending there, and you can see that in the 19th century. And the Rothschilds are in the British Empire are a great example of that in the 19th century, kind of Jewish ascendancy in the 19th century. So it is what it is. And there's simply no political resistance to it. Again, it is ironic that while this is going on, they're literally the IDF is bombing tent cities, calling them terrorists. I say the Hamas is very clever. They have cross-dressers and dwarves disguising themselves as women and children. That's what the IDF is claiming or something. It's amazing. And remember, the IDF, the Israeli Defense Force, the Israelis or Jews, have a very expansive definition of defense. You know, so when they claim to them defending themselves, just getting rid of anybody who gets in their way or opposes them or seeks some sort of negotiated settlement, then that is something they won't tolerate because it violates their supremacist attitudes. And we're seeing it play out. But, you know, the irony, you're watching an ad paid for by Bob Kraft, this Jewish oligarch, about stop Jewish hate, which I thought was an interesting way to put it. because you can interpret that two different ways.
Right. Yeah.
But we're watching this ad, but the very time we're watching this multi-million dollar ad they're putting on the Super Bowl, the U.S., Israelis are carrying out a massacre that's paid for by the U.S. taxpayer, you know?
Yeah, it's quite ironic and tragic. Don't know how to raise the, the subject of the Palestinian genocide any more than the independent media has done. It's sort of it shows the limits of our power, because we don't have a staying power. You know, you can get quite a few people talking about it at the beginning of it and through October, but then as the issue becomes kind of normalized, to use an expression, then it just fades away. The independent media doesn't really have a very loud voice in regards to it.
Jews control hard power and soft power because A, they control the U.S. State Department, U.S. foreign policy, intelligence agencies. Same time, behind the scenes, they have bribed and blackmailed all the senior politicians.
Who aren't just conversos or Freemasons.
Yeah, so there's no institutional resistance to it. And as Putin said when he was challenged, this is another issue with Putin, when he was challenged by Tucker Carlson regarding the bombing of the Nord Stream pipeline, he said, "Well, if you have evidence that the CIA or Western powers did it, why didn't you share it?" He said, "What's the point? The West or America controls the propaganda machine, which is the media. And really, it just doesn't get out. And most people simply get their vision of reality through these propaganda organs still." So
that's true. I would say,
and by the way, and there's no way to even if people are against it, there's no really way to transmit their will through the political process, because the political process is bought and paid for. It's all controlled. We can talk about that later on in our discussion.
Right. And that's exactly right. And that's, so all we can do at this point is to build, larger and larger fraction of the population that's aware, and try to put the idea out that we need to, develop our own political power. We don't have any now. And so we have to find ways to resist this, the facade of democracy, which is in fact a kind of dictatorship, which, is intent on genociding not just the Palestinians, but all of us.
Yeah, it's an oligarchy covered with a thin layer of democracy, which is tyranny. The good example of how this is twisted. I read an article yesterday that FBI Director Christopher Wray went to Israel. He's meeting with Israeli officials. Now, why? He's FBI Director. He's supposed to be involved in domestic law enforcement security. Why is he going to Israel? The FBI Director Wray made an unannounced trip to Israel where he sat on intelligence meetings before. And so his visit is the first time he's been there since the October 7th Hamas attack. But there was one day of attacks. Here we are in mid to late February, and they're still attacking. The FBI director met with the counterparts in Israel, Shin Bet, who I think that they actually played a role in creating Hamas. I don't think that was brought up. But basically, it's a security one of these security conferences where they're coordinating efforts to combat terrorism. So now what they're really doing is they're roping the U.S. into this conflict even more by somehow suggesting that Hamas's attack on Israel somehow is a threat to U.S. security because of this thing called terrorism. Remember that? Remember terrorism about 20 years ago? It was all the rage.
Right. It was. Yeah.
Before, so now they're trying to rope us in. Now we have domestic law enforcement officials meeting with Israeli military intelligence, Israeli intelligence, Shin Bet. I think they're military intelligence. What are they talking about? And again, they're trying to suggest to you that Hamas's beef with Israel somehow involves the United States. And of course, it does in a way, not the way that I mean it, but really the beef is obviously because of Israelis' constant. One thing is the original ethnic cleansing that occurred in 1948 at gunpoint, and the continued ethnic cleansing that's occurred since then. It's the only reason why it involves the United States, because the United States subsidizes Israel because all our politicians are bribed and blackmailed to do so. And we have a media that's controlled by CNN Israeli agents, namely powerful oligarchic Jews who identify with Israel first. It's same with our Jewish representatives like Nadler and Schumer and company.
Yeah, that's very fair representation of our reality. It's just a very frustrating and sad moment for me because you know, we have tried over the last few years to get the Palestinian issue into better understanding by the people. And I think that did help a bit at the beginning in October, you know, 7th. I think that there are a lot of people open to the idea this was a false flag. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, that didn't become a mainstream story. But that's a story that I think the independent media is still focus on. It's the one that really creates the most psychic energy for action when you realize that the entire slaughter of the Palestinians is literally a genocide. It is not, you know, the sophistry that this is fighting back. It's a war. You know, we're fighting against Hamas. I mean, obviously, Hamas is a creation of, you know, the Judeo-Masonic world. I mean, certainly you can see the funding for it. Certainly you can see that the idea of their attack on Israel is just inexplicable. It doesn't work as foreign policy for them. It doesn't work in terms of the story that is given, you know, being the idea that the Israeli border security failed 7 times. I mean, this is preposterous. And then, of course, you know, that the Israelis were completely ready to launch this attack on the Palestinians. So none of it makes any sense, except for when you look at it as a false flag. And then you have a logical framework that is, you know, coherent. And that's what should be presented to, you know, by the independent media to the public, is we've got to start really getting them to think more clearly about sort of the historical structures of propaganda. I mean, we're going to be talking later on in the show about the history of liberalism. And there, it's the same story, that if you don't have an understanding of the structure of the propaganda, you're just at the mercy of genocidal oligarchs. And, you know, that is what we're having to deal with right now.
We're talking about the forced removal of upwards of 2 million people. Where are they going to go? And estimated 30,000 dead, 12,000 are children, I think. I don't think anyone's disputing those numbers. This is in response to a one-day raid on the border of disputed territory. I mean, this is ridiculous. Talk about disproportionate. I think Joe Biden called it over the top. bit over the top. But I'm going to keep
famous victims, you know, you have the babies, the Israeli babies, which is now
the 40 beheaded babies.
Debunked. I mean, you know, there's no evidence of this. It was just a horrific story.
I think what happened was there were 40 babies that weren't born yet. So Hamas terrorists ripped them out of the wombs of pregnant women, beheaded the babies, and then raped the women.
Right.
No evidence, but we have to believe it occurred. I'm exaggerating. I'm combining two different stories.
A horror. It's a horror movie. And then, of course, the attack on the rave dancing, bikini clad, you know, people. I mean, so the whole thing is ridiculous.
You have a rave party on a border with a disputed territory.
Right. It doesn't make any sense at all as real history. It was just done to create the most horrific crimes that they could then sell to the gullible. So that then they could go in and slaughter Palestinians.
And it's creating another humanitarian refugee crisis, which Israel has the institutions set up to distribute these people throughout the West, Europe, and the United States, for which there is a plan, right?
Of course. And that's what the ones that aren't killed will be deported. We talked about this, I think, October the 9th, we started saying this was what was going to happen.
The Biden administration has come out and said that no Palestinian refugees will be deported from the United States.
Right.
So are they coming here already? I'm trying to.
Of course. So, you know, and I'll tell you, I'm sorry that they have this, you know, aspect of their life, but I don't mind them coming here because a lot of them will bring a really clear mind with them. And if you know what I mean. So,
well, they won't, then they'll be shut down if they protest. They'll be kicked out.
I'd rather have the Palestinians than say, you know, I don't know, the Turks or the, you know, Ethiopians, because they are like the Costa Ricans, El Salvadors, because those people tend just to go straight to welfare and are just, you know,
immediately,
you know, onto the left wing part of America. So I think the Palestinians, and I know some, there are some here in California, and they're just far more conservative. You can imagine, you know, they've experienced and they're very skeptical of the whole, you know, Judeo-Masonic project, obviously, you know,
for obvious reasons.
Yeah, we'll take all of those we can get. And, you know, I mean, this would be an example of the open border, criminal treason that's occurring, actually working in the favor of the country, perhaps.
Yeah. This week, the U.S. Congress made history. I think they impeached the cabinet secretary. First time since 1876, U.S. House of Representatives voted to impeach by one vote, I think, 214 to 213. Secretary of Homeland Security Alejandro Mayorkas accused him of failing to deal with the influx of migrants illegally crossing the Mexico border. I think that's a fact. It's not an accusation. I think the debate is whether or not it's an impeachable offense. Obviously, it's dereliction of duty and his oath of office. Of course, Alejandro Mayorkas, look at his name. And he's Jewish. Of course, that wasn't brought up. The motion to bring impeachment charges against Mayorkas passed 214 to 213 on Tuesday, with three Republicans joining all Democrats voting against the measure. Now, what defense does he have? In the 22-page motion, the lawmakers said Mayorkas had refused to obey federal court decisions regarding the border crisis, saying he is responsible for the massive surge at the southern border. The filing also accused the official of misleading Congress, claiming he has demonstrated he will remain a threat to national and border security and act in a manner grossly incompatible with the duties with his duties and the rule of law. Throughout his tenure as Secretary of Homeland Security, Alejandro N. Mayorkas has repeatedly violated laws enacted by Congress regarding immigration and border security. That can be applied to the entire Biden administration, really. We've seen the southern border. We had that showdown with Texas and the Biden administration, the governor there. There's over who can, you know, putting up barbed wire or tearing it down, defending the border. Now, it's interesting. In a statement, DHS spokesperson Mia Ehrenberg, note that name, said Republicans in the House would be remembered by history for trampling on the Constitution for political gain rather than working to solve the serious challenge at the border. In a sense, she's kind of right there, but not what she means. Obviously, this is political theater. He's not going to be convicted in the Senate. Democrats control the Senate by one or two votes. And of course, I think you need 2/3 of the Senate, right? Or is it 3/4 of the Senate?
You know, I don't know. That's a good question.
But you need a supermajority to convict. Does that apply to a cabinet?
I think it's complicated. My sense is the issue is the filibuster. You need a supermajority to break that.
Yeah.
And but I think a simple majority.
I'm just assuming the same proportion is necessary for a cabinet versus for a president. Impeachment. Let's see. Mayorkas. Let's see what he need here. I'm just going to do a quick check here.
Now, I think it would just be a simple majority, but they have the filibuster, which you need the supermajority to break. So that's why the whole thing is a waste of time, and because they'll obviously never be able to.
They don't have the votes for it. So it's theater. In a way, it's not completely useless theater because it makes the point, but Republicans aren't really to go all the way on this, nor are they willing to address the real issue here, of course. Mayorkas, of course, invokes the fact that he is a survivor or a descendant of Holocaust survivors when criticized. And I think I've mentioned a week or two ago that Mayorkas, it's not a conspiracy theory that hundreds of thousands of immigrant invaders are entering the U.S. border unopposed each month. And they're recruited by non-governmental organizations that are funded not only by the U.S. government, but also by various oligarchs like George Soros to do this very thing. One of these organizations is the Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society, which for some reason is obsessed with bringing foreigners, illegal immigrants into the United States, as well as European countries. And of course, Alejandro Mayorkas was a board member up until December 2020. I guess that's when he just, in January, he joined the Biden administration. And of course, I've mentioned when Biden made that statement a few years ago talking about the unrelenting stream of brown people coming in the country, overwhelming this the white majority of the United States, ethnic white majority of the United States, and that being a good thing, that America was no longer going to be a majority white population. Of course, the implication is the white majority is a bad thing. Behind him, to his right, was Alejandro Mayorkas. So he himself was foreign born and was an immigrant invader. And he was he's director of Homeland Security in the United States, and he is Jewish. And he was a board member of a Jewish organization that's dedicated to undermining the U.S. border and swamping the country with foreigners. And of course, that's not addressed by the U.S. Congress, nor is Congress really looking into this web or network of non-governmental organizations tied into like the Open Society Foundation and other Jewish organizations that are dedicated to undermining the country's sovereignty by flooding it. That would, again, this goes to a deeper question, is Congress's oversight or control. Congress is supposed to be sovereign. They're the most representative body, particularly the House of Representatives, from which the impeachment begins, addressing the issue of self-government, meaning how can we have self-government if non-governmental organizations, oligarchs, foundations are spending billions of dollars and also are suborning the U.S. government in using U.S. government agencies to do the very thing that they're supposed to protect against, meaning invasion of the borders. How do we have self-government? A good example is just they're working to also integrate these illegal immigrants, making them citizens, giving them the right to vote. That undermines self-government at the most basic level. I mean, these elected representatives are our democracy. But there's no really look. There's no investigation into that, because that would require something akin to the committee hearings of the 1950s, plus un-American activities investigations, and also the committee hearings of the 1950s into the intrigues and workings of the great tax-exempt foundations, which were investigated for undermining what was referred to as the American way of life. And that was,
yeah, it'd be great to have some discussion on this. Mm-hmm. You know, Biden talks about how good it is that we're getting rid of the white majority. There should be some questioning as to why that's a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they have made a kind of, it's just axiomatic that integration is a wonderful thing. And yet, could we have an example of where it's working to create a wonderful world? You know, I mean, you look, the more it seems to me that the places that are the most integrated are the places that people are trying to leave the quickest,
yeah,
you know, in a general sense. So
did anyone challenge Biden when he said that? Why is it a good thing that the ethnic whites are being overwhelmed?
But you see, the thing is what would be great is if the discussion actually went forward a bit and people asked, since it's so irrational, this idea that somehow there's a benefit to society to have this massive integration movement, then, well, what is your motivation for it? What are you actually trying to achieve with it? Since obviously the workers' paradise that you're offering is not ever going to take place, and it's just, you know, sophistry. So why are you doing it? I mean, really, what is occurring is just a broad scale kind of racial attack, wherein they dilute the populations of any ethnicity, right? Mm-hmm. And what is left is just this, it is a clump of humanity that has no ethnic strength.
Well, this is ethnic cleansing. What Biden admitted to supporting a few years ago was by definition ethnic cleansing.
But it's ethnic cleansing for a purpose, because the group that remains is not some kind of political powerhouse that creates peace on earth and a strong democracy. They are that's the autonomous zone, which is to say these are people who have to have a government largesse in order to survive. There's no skill set for them, either political, financial, or even
cultural. But with this thing is what you were seeing here is there is an ill-defined and secret organization that's doing this, meaning that it's undermining our government. It controls the media. It behind the scenes controls the politicians, which is why there's no investigation. And this is why I refer to the Reese Committee hearings, where they're looking into this very thing with the foundation. This is back in the 1950s, and perhaps Congress had some pretense of representation and sovereignty. That was, by the way, those hearings were shut down. So it tells you who was more powerful in that relationship. Basically, it was the oligarchs and their foundations. The foundations were created to bring about social change above and behind the political process, not open debate. There would, I mean, there was a what they would do. There was a here's how it was described in E. Michael Jones, in his book on John Gardner Kroll and the Cultural Revolution. And this is still how this is how it's how it happens today with the NGOs. Says Rene Worms, a Reese's legal assistant, throughout the hearings, this is the Reese Committee hearings, documented in a book published in 1957, that not only the dangers posed by the foundations, you could say NGOs now, to the institutions of the Republic, but also the influence of those foundations. Their political allies were bringing to bear on the nation's cultural institutions. This is how cultural warfare is waged by these groups. It's not democratic, it's not out in the open, it's not a free debate on these things. The great foundations, Ford, Rockefeller, Carnegie, were for the most part founded as a result of the New Deal, as an attempt to prevent the flow of family money into the coffers of the federal government under the tax policies instituted by the by Roosevelt. Created from the wealth of the country's major capitalist, the foundation soon applied the techniques of cartel and trust to the flow of information and reconfiguration of culture. The foundations would put up money, which would serve as venture capital in the politics of change. Foundations like those run by the Rockefeller brothers would fund projects like the Kinsey sex surveys, which would have been otherwise impossible to support given the constraints of democratically elected government, or the simple satisfying of market forces. Foundations would fund research which they found congenial, and this almost invariably involved instigating social change away from the position of congruity with the moral law. They involved, more often than not, as the Kinsey studies did, the substitution of scientific data for moral principle. Then, when the project had received modicum of public acceptance, the foundations would then turn the funding of the projects over to the government.
That's very important, yeah. Particularly Kinsey, because what you see there is what we're now experiencing a conclusion of with the transgender and the LGBTQ movement. Mm-hmm. It all begins with Kinsey, which is basically scientific fraud, never been replicated. Any of these, you know, the ideas of like, well, how many gay people and percentage wise in the population. And, you know, like, so Kinsey was then promoted by the Rockefellers to produce this material, which then became the basis for sort of scientific defense of, you know, like going against laws which prohibited homosexuals from having public office and things like this.
Yeah, you know? It was like the American Psychological Association in 1973 voting to declassify, you know, homosexuality as a mental illness. Yeah,
but the fact that this was an oligarchic construction from the very beginning is just absolutely critical for people to understand, because then you can, when you look at the Pritzker's, you know, promotion of the transgender movement, you can see that you're really just in a very identifiable context. There just isn't any confusion here about who's doing it, why they're doing it, and what the end result is. Mm-hmm. You know, they're trying to transform humanity into a non-biological entity, you know, where, in a way like what Huxley described in Brave New World, where you have categories of intelligence, but the state controls all of the reproduction. It's birth control on a mass scale is what you're really looking at. The people are sterilized. I was reading with one study of a high school, which was, it was a elite high school, and they claimed that over 30% of the population were basically, you know, non-binary sexuality. Brown University had a similar statistic.
Yeah, why are they even asking the question?
Why would you ask the question? But why would you, as a parent, send your child into what is a biological, you know, holocaust? Because, you know, if you look at an institution like that, what do you think the ultimate reproduction rates are going to be? They're going to be close to zero. So this is how insane, you know, the woke, you know, kind of sexual understanding of the world is. It literally doesn't even have two generations in it. So why did they do it? I mean, this, again, you have to ask the question, just like with the mass immigration. When you ask the question, the honest question, then, well, there really isn't anything else other than just depopulation that makes any sense. That's
NPR, I mentioned this a week or so ago, NPR ran a report that said that men, you know, spurning pornography and not masturbating is a gateway to extremism, which is right out of Wilhelm Reich and the Authoritarian Personality.
It is
exactly. I mean, it's like okay, you upend everything primarily through sexual subversion, and that's what they do with that's a strategy. Basically, it's kind of undermining sort of the foundation, the primal ties and bonds and foundation for a normal, healthy family and community. But what they want is they get this with promoting sexual perversion, degeneracy, and confusion, which you do through traumatizing children in the schools by having a bunch of predators as teachers and administrators and so-called what do you call it, advisors, right? And you create a reward system for this type of behavior, and pretty soon, and you derogate healthy behavior. Pretty soon, you can have a large portion of that of the class identifying as this because they've been traumatized and distorted with perverted teachings and indoctrination. Yeah, become indoctrination centers. With immigration, is you bring in a bunch of low agency, peasants from the third world, and the third world is a third world largely because of the people that live there. So you bring them into our country, then we become the third world. But then you have a large population of people who are low agency, who live a very precarious existence. They present no threat to the oligarchs. And if you doubt this is a strategy, look at California. They did it in California.
They did. I think California is actually sort of the best case for civilization, because the immigrants that they brought in were primarily from Mexico, had more family connections than the current crop of immigrants that are coming in from, El Salvador. I mean, mm-hmm. What I'm seeing and what I'm reading is that they're almost all males.
Yes. Oh, gee, what
is that going to do for you? Now, in California, they ended up with just a tremendous amount of, pregnant, Latino women who are having children here.
That's the 14th Amendment anchor baby thing.
Right. And so this was, of course, the idea was to dilute and then ultimately destroy the kind of European Reagan European that California, had as its backbone. And they did that. But I wouldn't be too surprised if that the Mexican kind of descendants in California will present a special problem for the oligarchs because of they have a Catholic background, mm-hmm. and they are they're not that susceptible to the sexual degenerate propaganda. They're very solid. They kind of just speak their simple truth, and they don't get swayed. So where I live, they're by far the more moral force than the whites, who are, well, at this point I would say just in general.
But are they an impediment to the oligarchs that reign over California?
No, they're not, because they don't have the agency of wealth.
Yeah.
And the tradition of democracy. They come from, bear in mind, these people come from basically a slave country.
Just like how Jews in America, although they were discomforted by the protests after the October 7th raid on the college campuses, and there was much talk of Jews or organized Jewry second guessing their promotion of mass non-white immigration into the West because it presents a large population that has animosity towards Jews that might rethink that and identify as whites once again. Well, actually, they still, on balance, they benefit from a low agency Babel society as opposed to a homogeneous white.
Yeah, the key is the level of agency. This is what you have to keep your eye on. It's like you can call them anything you want. They can have family, but if they have a tradition of not having any political power, then that is going to dilute America. And
like in Latin America, where they're used to oligarchy,
where they've had they've had dictators going all the way back to United Fruit. So it's just not a place that you have people who are going to be forthright in the political system trying to, create real democracy for the people. So, you end up with people like Gavin Newsom,
yes, or
Kamala Harris. I mean, for God's sake, so this is what.
Yeah, they're cartoonish. I mean, politicians have always been kind of corrupt and double talking, but these characters are cartoonishly corrupt and double talking and stupid.
Well, I would say, they are that there's no question, but they're also, lifetime actors. I mean, Newsom is not what he portrays himself as. Obviously, you know, there is an agenda.
Yeah, Kamala Harris is a descendant of slave owners.
Right. Well, I mean, Newsom grew up in the house of J. Paul Getty. His father, J. Paul Getty's financial steward. He's the one who delivered the ransom for J. Paul Getty's grandson.
And Getty was a Rothschild agent, right?
And Getty was a 100%. Getty was more set up by the Rothschilds than George Soros. Yeah. So Getty is just a front for the Rothschilds. And, you know, and this is when you have Gavin Newsom talking about, you know, the need for vaccine mandates. You're just getting straight shot, to use an expression of, you know, Judeo-Masonic malevolence. You know, they're trying to create, you know, to increase the chemical attack on the people in order to implement, you know, the Delta and Epsilon class.
Yeah, I was listening to a debate or a discussion, rather, with Ben Shapiro. I believe it was Michael Knowles, who's a conservative YouTuber. And I forget the third person. It might have been Jeremy Boring, who runs Ben Shapiro's outfit. And they were talking about immigration and Jews. And he says, not necessarily Jews. They weren't talking in that context. They wouldn't. But Ben Shapiro was talking about it. He said he doesn't care about the race or color of immigrants. He cares about ideology. That's what matters more. Ideas more than blood and soil, basically, that argument. And he said that he would much rather have, free market thinking people from the third world who aren't used to large government services, and say 100 million Swedes coming to the country who are used to big government socialism. I'll say, first of all, wait. You're going to tell me people coming from Guatemala and Senegal have an ideological commitment to anything?
Right. I mean,
they live in they don't get any government services, but they're not libertarian. They're coming here and go on the benefits, go on the welfare rolls. I mean, you're mixing a whole completely different situation here.
Even for Shapiro, that is truly what the.
And I was like, what? You're going to tell me that you're Nigerian or someone from Ghana is a libertarian? He's like, reading books by Ludwig von Mises and Murray Rothbard. And
how many of them are setting up their own little entrepreneurial businesses?
You kidding me? I mean, look at the welfare rolls. I mean, look at the benefits, the $5,000, you know, gift cards they're giving. Yeah, so, New York has established a program. So what was it? I forget. What was it? It was like $53 million program or something. I forget what it was, but just to give money to people. I mean, it's like.
Right. They pay them to be here and eventually will pay them to vote. And Shapiro, the idea that he's, you know, we're bringing in kind of independent thinking libertarians. I mean, this is.
Sweden had its own problems. I'm not an advocate of Swedish socialism, but there wasn't an immigration problem from Sweden, was there? They weren't leaving Sweden.
And the idea that
they were obviously comfortable there.
And the idea that the Swedes wouldn't be more independently thinking and more capable of entrepreneurial independence than like the Ethiopians is just stupid. It's too stupid even to like merit a response. Shapiro is. No, he's one of the. I mean, he's just there to be a kind of a glowering presence and to use, you know, kind of intimidating sophistry. He's an absolute idiot.
Sweden, a country of 9 million people, with all these you know socialist national programs, but you're talking a homogeneous society of 9 million people, and also an economy or a political economy which actually favors corporate development. That's why these large Swedish corporations. It's high personal tax rates. In return for large government services. That's why Sweden was set up. Now, I'm not an advocate of that, but it's not my problem. And I think to a certain extent, it sort of undermines Swedish morality or morale in the 60s. But then again, you have to factor in the importation of Jewish feminism and what that did. What would have been without that, right? Nevertheless, my point is, no, it's not the problem. You know, anyway, anyone who leaves Sweden and comes to the United States is going to expect that anyway. But the point is that talk about misrepresenting the issue to cover up your own, you know, your own.
That's just stupid. There really isn't. It doesn't require a response. It's just only to point out that Shapiro is using sophistry and propaganda to try to, you know, get a camouflage for what could be called the Great Replacement. Yeah. But the Great Replacement is not a good term. It doesn't really, it's not accurate. It's the Great Debasement. Mm-hmm. They're debasing our morals with pornography, and they're debasing our democracy with immigrants who have no agency. You see, it isn't that they're just replacing the whites. Or if they could replace the whites with people who could do what whites do, well, okay, then that would be one thing. That isn't what's happening. Mm-hmm. The people who are coming in here are not going to end up being middle class, you know, Republican kind of individuals. They're going to be slaves of the welfare class. That's all they're really able to be, you know, at this point. So, you know, I mean, just we have to learn to ignore these people when we're able to. So
the New York Times ran an article, lamenting America's turn towards dictatorship. This is written about, I guess, regarding Trump's the possibility of Donald Trump returning to the presidency, since he's leading in the polls. He's the Republican front runner, and he's also pulling ahead of the demented Joe Biden. By the way, officially demented, that by his own Justice Department admits that he can't be held responsible for his legal problems because he's too demented. Yeah. But nevertheless, he's running for re-election. But they ran an article comparing Donald Trump to Adolf Hitler, of course. Now, again, I'm not a big fan of Donald Trump. I didn't vote for him in 2016. I don't see him being a particularly dignified political figure. His manner he's entertaining, I grant him that, but it's just, to me, he's just a sign of America's decadence. But they're claiming that his rhetoric is equivalent to used by, you know, German or Italian authoritarians in the 1930s, claiming he's uttering the big lie, basically election fraud 2020, that sort of thing. This was written by Michael C. Bender and Michael Gold. Yeah, Michael Bender and Michael Gold for the New York Times. So this is, they're continuing the long tradition of New York Times propaganda. But again, worrying about authoritarianism and saying he's going to undermine our democracy, of course, ignores the fact that our democracy has long since been undermined, and also the fact that our system, by claiming to be liberal, has never been genuinely liberal, because the moment that Americans exercise their rights under their presumed rights under the liberal order, and if they present any meaningful opposition to the ambitions or designs of those in power, they're immediately shut down through legal means or through censorship, canceling, and this is a long tradition of that, or even some, oftentimes imprisonment. We can cite accounts throughout American history of people opposing policies in Washington or a particular politician literally being thrown in prison. An entire legislature, I think Lincoln during the Civil War, he disbanded the entire Maryland legislature, arrested the mayor of Baltimore, suspended habeas corpus. I think there were as many as 20,000 people held without trial throughout the Civil War who opposed his policies regarding seceded South. Not to mention, of course, the all the blood and destruction that was shed during the war. Gross violations of civil liberties. He had to destroy the Republic in order to save it, so to speak. You've had the transgressions of World War One or the Wilson administration, Sedition Acts, and also the Espionage Acts, which pretty much suspended the First Amendment, threw people in prison for criticizing things like the draft, military conscription, also for opposing the war. Eugene Debs actually ran for president from jail because he was charged with reading the Bill of Rights in public or something, and that was considered sedition. Other things like during the Second World War, the media was censored. You had we can talk about, there was a great, I think, the Brown Scare and the great sedition trials that occurred during the war that finally ended in the mistrial, where you heard the average Americans were charged with sedition for simply opposing FDR's drive to war in 1939 through 1941, the suppression of the American First Committee. So there's a long tradition of suppressing critics like Father Coughlin, who actually was kicked off the radio and had the U.S. Post Service wouldn't deliver his newsletter because of his criticism of the federal government. So there's a long tradition of suppressing meaningful opposition to the federal government or the powers that be under the guise of liberalism. Liberalism that has never quite lived up to its billings, so to speak.
Of course not. You know, I would love to have those individuals who wrote the article write another article and show point by point the the propensity for tyranny that Trump is exhibiting when juxtaposed against the Molly Ball Brigade, who are organizing the voting of the
American yes. people.
I mean, just do it point by point.
You're referring to the February 2021 article in Time magazine, which a few people still read, bragging about this broad effort of organized labor, corporations, the intelligence agencies, the media, to secure the election for Donald, right. for right. Joe Biden.
And you know, you'd have to do a little bit of head scratching to make sure that, you know, you took the euphemisms and then put them into, you know, populist statistics so you could see what Molly Ball and her crowd were actually doing. But they were, in effect, operating as tyrants. You know, they were just saying, well, we kind of had figured out how this democratic voting process works, and we're just going to control it to put in our people, right? I mean, they weren't really appealing for individual humans to vote for particular candidates. They were saying, now we understand how this kind of works, and we're just going to put in our guys. Mm-hmm. So I would love to see the juxtaposition of how they could think that Trump and Trump's voters are less democratic than the admitted and documented process by which the Democratic Party puts its people into office.
Mm-hmm. Well, the Twittergate, whereas the FBI put pressure on Twitter to suppress the Hunter Biden laptop story.
Exactly.
Isn't that election interference? Or just recently, this article of Matt Taibbi, I think it was Michael Schellenberg, regarding the effort by the CIA. He was a former director of CIA, John Brennan, got supposed allied countries to spy on 26 Trump associates. Basically, what they do is, since the CIA can't do it, they get foreign intelligence agencies to do it. Then they feed the information to the FBI to create the pretext for the Russian collusion hoax. And now that's exposed. I've heard about that, called the Echelon program. Basically, where competing intelligence agencies get their intelligence agencies to do domestic, well, since technically CIA can't do domestic spying, they liaise with foreign intelligence agencies to allow them, and presumably tell the FBI to back off, to allow them to conduct espionage and feed that information to the FBI. And that's exactly what occurred here.
Yeah, that's why we have so many intelligence agencies, so that there's no, there's no way.
This is the Five Eyes system.
Yeah, any one of them can be doing anything wrong.
But you're manipulating this intelligence apparatus, which supposedly is created to defend the country against foreign threats, mobilizing it for domestic political purposes, which is illegal, and then feeding it to the FBI to conduct in some cases, put people in jail.
Have to get plugged into, Tim, into the analysis of Mary Ball, what she's actually referring to, because, you know, a lot of this stuff is now just out in the open, you know, the Twittergate stuff, because when you put that into the context of what Ball is talking about, and then try to juxtapose that against, well, Trump is going to do what to be a dictator? You can see that this is the pot, you know, calling the kettle black. They're using this attack on Trump because this defends them against this attack.
Well, how is he going to act like a dictator if the CIA and FBI are mobilized against him, even if he's in the White House?
Right.
I mean, he says, I think Trump said, and it was kind of tongue-in-cheek, but in any way, I thought it was a fair, at least a sophisticated analysis of the issue, if inadvertently says that if he's elected, he'll have to act like a dictator because he'll need the clean house. And when they corrupt the political process so much, when the legitimate judicial processes are corrupted and the bureaucracies are so infested with these agents who have no regard for their oath of office or the Constitution, the rule of law, or the truth, what do you do with that? You either get rid of it or clean house. It can be a very messy process, but they created the mess. I mean,
right.
How do you expect one side? I mean, assuming that, just for the sake of our discussion today, that Trump represents the other side, the right versus the left, put it in those simplistic terms. The left doesn't play by the rules. The right has to. How is that fair?
Yeah.
right? Obviously, they're assuming is the right has to play by the rules and the left can do whatever they want, ends justify the means to preserve their democracy.
Yeah, but again, this is actually just an aspect of the third-term personality where they're just defining the behavior of Christian culture as neurotic. They're saying it's evil.
Yeah.
It creates majorities and so we have to find ways to prevent it, break it apart, whatever. But they are subverting democracy in the very act that they claim to be defending democracy with. I mean, for heaven's sakes, if you want to preserve democracy, get to the border and stop the hordes coming across.
Yeah, right? When has mass immigration ever been popular? When have people voted for it? Nevertheless, right. Politicians allow it, despite, right. 85-80% right. disapproval.
And despite the fact that it's going to lead to a one-party state, because that's why these people are being brought in, right? I mean, there's no way they're going to be, transitioning it. I mean, I know that they have a lot more entrepreneurial energy than Swedes do, certainly. But nevertheless, I have a feeling a lot of them are getting up on the welfare rolls, and they're sure going to be voting for the politicians that are going to be offering them the biggest welfare check.
Yeah,
right?
They're not building like luxury apartment buildings in Maine for Swedish immigrants.
No.
Taxpayers have to pay for. They're doing it for people from Senegal and Ghana,
yeah, so
Guatemala, yeah, this, or whatever. I mean. Because Maine is designated too white by the federal government, and that's why it's happening.
Yeah, so this is all just part of a broad-scale attack on European culture. It's really, it is as old as Deuteronomy. I mean, it's unfortunate that the people who have power in our world, particularly this fraction of the Jews that have political power, are so fundamental in terms of their outlook on ethnicities. I mean, they are just obviously waging war against the idea of European ethnicity, and they're going to dilute it to nothing with immigrants from Africa.
Well, here's the thing. They're accusing Trump of being authoritarian, of going after his – he may go after his political opponents if elected. Well, the Biden administration is doing it. Right
of
now,
course.
As we speak.
Look, Jim, if there was ever a real policy.
Not just Trump, I'm talking about the hundreds or a thousand or so January 6th protesters who are languishing in prison.
Let me just rest assured that if we ever had a president elected who was a real representative of the American people, I mean, not of the oligarch class, but an actual American, the first thing he would do would be to turn to all of the judicial, governmental bureaucracy, military hierarchy, and say, I will require your resignations on my tomorrow morning. Every one of you, you're all gone. There'll be chaos for a few months as we sort this out. Who cares? You're gone. You'd have to get rid of every one of them because they're all put in for malevolent purposes. Yeah.
Yeah, that's another thing that goes back to when I was talking about the Reese Committee hearings, investigation of the foundations. There was a real effort by the Congress to look into these things, and it was shut down. And, of course, there were efforts. There were congressmen who were looking to shut it down at the time because they were doing the bidding of the oligarchs. But they were looking into this undermining of the American way of life, the American Republican system, because they were using subterfuge money, foundation money. There was tax exempt, so the taxpayers were granting these oligarchs a benefit to do these things. Well, they are working to undermine the current system society we live under. That's undermining the country's morals, its culture, its institutions. These things are sort of pre-political, meta-political, so it's difficult really to address these things without really, if you don't acknowledge the initial threat. And that's what these organizations were getting. Of course, the way the press treated, because the press was controlled by the oligarchs, was it became a McCarthyist witch hunt. And McCarthy himself was controlled by Roy Cohn, which misdirected him. It was all communists. Well, it turns out it wasn't communists they were you have to be worried about, really, although that was an element or dimension to it. There was something else involved in that. And of course, that Roy Cohn.
Exactly. There's always a handler to try to keep people in cold facts. It's like, you see, like the Medical Freedom Brigade, and they go as far as, well, it's the deep state, that they had some reason for the bizarre vaccine mandates. Well, what is the deep state? Who is the deep state? You know, you you can't ever stop your analysis until you end up with the individual. You have to have the individual and his motivation, the class that he belongs to. I mean, if you don't have that, you just can't stop thinking. Anyone who tries to move you into, well, we're done, we've got the deep state identified, you know, I mean, this is nonsense. That is to keep you from going forward and identifying who actually is behind these things.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And again, one of the things, again, the claim of the liberal order or the liberal society, democracy, is that there's a respect for civil liberties, free speech, free inquiry and criticism, and a free press. None of those things exist today because of censorship, culture. We know with the with Google and Twitter and YouTube and these, and this is the public forum being liaising or control or being with the FBI, hate speech. Yeah, behind that is the ADL, by the way. You have private intelligence operations like the ADL, the Southern Poverty Law Center, which are intimidating people, ruining people's lives, telling Elon Musk that he must do this and he has to pay tribute at Auschwitz and put on a little hat and pay tribute. And, you know, it's obvious at this point.
Ben Shapiro was there to walk him around and show him the highlights.
Yeah, I was looking into some of these past, you know, repression of dissident Americans. And one of this case was this, the Brown Scare of the 1940s and the sedition trials that the Roosevelt administration orchestrated. And they went after, they purposely avoided big fish like, Burton Wheeler and other congressmen who opposed these non-interventionist isolationist congressmen. They went after, what's his name? Lindbergh. They didn't go after them. They went after pamphleteers, small businessmen, and charged them, with sedition. As many as 30, I think, went on trial, and it ended in a mistrial in 1946, a year after the war ended. The judge died in 1944, finally. But basically, they were usually just critics of Roosevelt's administration's efforts to get America involved in the war. Much of their criticism has since been vindicated about some of the intrigues of the Roosevelt administration. Basically, knowledge of the Pearl Harbor, the provocation, Now, some of these organizations, like American Boone Party, Nazi Party, they were friendly to Germany. But that before America entered the war, that's just as legitimate as being friendly to Great Britain. There was no investigation of William Stevenson and their operations in Rockefeller Center that the Roosevelt administration set up with British espionage, and also they're in cahoots with the ADL, B'nai B'rith. And it turns out that the Roosevelt administration went after these people to suppress opposition to his policies. It wasn't because they were guilty of anything per se. They just wanted to harass them. And it was observed they went after small people to create a chilling effect, make sure that there was no grassroots efforts to oppose his policies. And even so much as the American First Committee's, the FBI raided the American First Committee's office and stole their membership list, which numbered like 900,000, destroying that as an organization. But the behind the pressure for the investigation was the ADL. This is 1942. The ADL was pressured the Roosevelt administration to intimidate. So 80 years ago, the ADL was working with the FBI, just like it is today, right? To suppress opposition and criticism of policies they advocate. Under the liberal order, we're told that you were supposed to respect their opinion and debate them in open forum and let their ideas compete in the free market of ideas and debate and let the best argument win out. But no, they immediately resorted to media censorship and also legal legalized terrorism, meaning going after them, trying to put them in prison for their views. Concocting some sort of vast conspiracy when there was none. These are just Americans, for the most part, from the Midwest who opposed the policies of Washington, D.C. and the Jewish lobby and the British and the Anglophile lobby, which wanted to get the country into the war. If you're a farmer in the Midwest and you don't want your son ending up dying in some rock out in the Pacific or dying in some field in France because you don't see any reason why America can get involved in the war, you were considered un-American,
Yeah. It's interesting, isn't it? I mean, if you're thinking of like the Holocaust, right? One of the great structures of intimidation that we have in our world. the first claims, which were in fact propaganda, were from Jewish bankers and from the American Jewish Congress. I mean, it was Stephen Weiss.
Yes.
You know, claimed to have had this bizarre information, all of which turned out to be false, right? Mm-hmm. But it just got the propaganda bandwagon rolling, and people who tried to stop this, who were saying, you know, we need to have more evidence before, you know, we start broadcasting this idea, they were intimidated and defeated. Remember, what's his name? Breckinridge Long, right? He was actually battling with Morgenthau, who was one of the people promoting it. And he was just shunted out of the government, you know, mm-hmm. because of his opposition to just not putting propaganda out until it had been verified. So, you know, these kind of structures are everywhere in our history, aren't they? They're just every single, you know, we turn over a rock, there it is. You know, this is just how they have controlled us, how they have brought about our intimidation, so now we can't speak up, you know, in our own.
This recently, I'm bringing it up to recent times. It was last year that the Biden administration indicted, what was it, the Black Socialist Party, for being agents of Russia for criticizing policies in the Ukraine.
Oh, right, I remember that. Yeah,
you know, and I think they were indicted under FAR, the Foreign Alien Registration Act, or Agent Registration Act. Well, has that law even applied to the ADL? Or APAC, the American yeah. Israeli Political Action Committee. I mean, investigate that. You know, in fact, there was, I think, the last president to suggest, at least the administration to suggest that that the APAC, I think then it was the American Zionist Council, register as a foreign agent was John F. Kennedy's administration. And Robert Kennedy advocated that. Now, what happened to John Kennedy and Robert Kennedy within the span of 5 years?
They weren't reelected.
No, they weren't.
So, investigation
of that, of the Jewish lobby ties to Israel. I mean, like, we have a Senator Schumer claiming he's a defender of Israel, primarily first and foremost. He identifies with Israel. He's a sitting senator.
Now, did he actually say that? I've heard different things about
that.
He
said, I'm a Shomer for Israel, a soldier or defender of Israel.
Soldier of Israel, yeah.
He said it at a speech with APAC. He said it in a Zoom thing. I heard it. And
delineate, like, well, I'm there, number one, and U.S. is number two. As far as I know, anyway, I've never
heard
that.
Well, let's put it this way. The Biden administration was staffed with 475 Hun Chinese or Russians. Do you think there'd be a debate about that?
Well, yeah, I think they're probably.
But it is filled with over 450 Jews at key nodes within the Biden administration. We wonder why the Biden administration is so friendly to Israel. And you
know, I think it's because Biden and his, you know, he's a converso. He's not a real Catholic.
It doesn't matter because he's demented at this point.
Yeah, he's demented. He's easy to control. But I mean, I've seen videos of him before he lost his mind. The famous one where he meets this Jewish guy in a hallway and he starts talking about what a Zionist he is. Mm-hmm. And he absolutely goes emotionally. He just loses himself in his fervor, you know, to.
Well, so didn't he kiss the feet of some Israeli Herzog, his feet or something? Isn't there a video of him kissing his feet or bowing to him?
No, you have to stand back from that and go, wait a second. Biden is reportedly a Catholic. He puts ashes on his forehead and Ash Wednesday. I mean, that has to do, you know, with Christ's crucifixion or, you know, I mean, to some extent. So, well, where does, you know, one can understand, you know, sort of an ambivalent or kind of, you know, honest, you know, understanding of Jewish people. But you really shouldn't naturally just become slavishly Zionist if you claim to have the Gospels as your foundation religion.
Yeah. Piece, right? Obviously, you'd be opposite to it, because if you're not anti-Jewish, you're philo-Semitic. You're philo-Jewish. I mean,
it's inexplicable. It needs an explanation, and that's why I say they're converso. I think that if you look into Biden's past, you'd see that actually his family was converso, and you know, they just are you know, they may be Catholic in name, but in fact, they retained a lot of kind of the sort of Jewish connections. And so that's why the Zionism is such an...
Also, there's a phenomenon, though, if you're deracinated and you're alienated, you know, from your faith effectively, meaning you're a cultural Catholic, but you really don't practice, you don't believe it, and you're corrupt to the core, like the Biden family is obviously is, you effectively become Jewish. Because that's your default.
Well, and I mean, it's like pornography.
It orbs a vacuum, so it fills. Just, yeah.
It's like a black hole that sweeps kind of European culture.
Well, this is why the Jews, they don't seek to convert the world. What they do is they subvert values, meaning you create the vacuum, which then is filled with Jewish power and control. That's why they support things like pornography and degeneracy, because that creates a spiritual vacuum from which then they can easily control. That's the strength. That's why when asked...
That is true.
Who said... the pornographer, I forget, guy did Screw magazine.
Al Greenspan.
Not Ginsburg.
No, it was like Greenstein or what was his name? Yeah.
He said he supports pornography because Christ sucks.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. Yeah, he but that's just I mean, that's absolutely typical, right? I mean, it's the idea is that Christianity represented something that was difficult for them.
Al Goldstein
to live with, and so they had to destroy it. And that's why, I mean, it's just this obvious fact that people should look at, you know, pornography as a kind of Jewish attack, a kind of Jewish weapon. They themselves admit it often, you know, that this why they're doing it among themselves. But the public, you know, Gentile public doesn't really have this understanding. I mean, that's why E. Michael Jones, I think, was so sort of revolutionary, you know, when he started talking about these things. He really started bringing these ideas to the public.
Well, remember, he titled his book, not The Revolutionary Jew, it's The Revolutionary Spirit, The Jewish Revolutionary Spirit, which means that it transcends physical bound, because, if you become morally corrupted, you default to that.
Yeah.
Which is why they're so involved in moral corruption.
The gay disco.
Yeah. You know, and so, and this is why you have so many, you know, purported Christian politicians like Nancy Pelosi, but the whole family goes back because her father was involved with the Jewish mafia and the drug trade, and he was mayor of Baltimore with the mob, you know.
Yeah, I think that they're converso. I mean, I don't know if you've ever heard Pelosi's talking about her affection for Israel, like when she was a young girl, and how they, I mean, had bake sales and things like this.
Yeah, why? I mean,
wait a second. This is absurd. Look, I went to Catholic school. They didn't really know much about Jews, but to the extent they did, they got their information from the Gospels, which didn't really give that kind of a sunny picture, you know. That well, and moreover, the idea that that you'd want to like work hard to bring the Jews back to Judea makes no sense at all, because from the Gospels you can see that they create a rationale for the diaspora.
Well, that's why the Jews paid for the Schofield Bible and the Christian.
Yeah, that's exactly right. The Schofield Bible, then they transmogrified the words so that Zionism could, you know, sort of fit into the stories in the Gospel, but there wasn't an original text.
So, and now it's become sort of the default mainstream view of Christianity's relation to Judaism now, unfortunately.
Judeo-Christian.
It's another neologism or phrase that was developed.
Right. So just the whole thing is a mess. But anyway, step by step, Tim, we're cleaning this all up, hopefully, and hopefully the public will start to move in the right direction here, huh?
Okay, Joe.
All right, buddy. Thank you for the discussion. We'll get them next week.
Take it easy. Bye-bye.
Bye.